which is 1.9 now, depending on it from the displaced people in Gaza, in UNRWA refugee camps in Gaza and around it, shows that the bills, or such bills, were designed by the Zionist regime to speed up the crime of crimes, genocide. That's what they are committing against the defenseless occupied people in Palestine. And they want to speed up that in the West Bank and in Gaza now. The Zionist regime and its sick population who are enjoying to see the catastrophic situation they did create for the Palestinians from the 40s till today are enjoying the images of tens of thousands of Palestinian people who are hungry and thirsty, queuing for a piece of bread or for some water on top of the ruins of their cities and their towns. And they destroying their lives. I'm telling you, the Zionist regime, if they can, they would suck the air from the Palestinian lungs in Gaza and the West Bank. And today, we can see not just the UNRWA, I said, this is the violation. It's against UNRWA. It's violation on the against the UN Charter regime, which is this is entity have obligation to commit to. This is, you know, the become, you know, the this entity becomes vicious in targeting United Nations, even in UNIFIL in south of Lebanon, and the Western countries, or even their sons being killed in such attacks, like Ireland and other European countries. Okay. Never even impose any sanctions, diplomatic or a trade, to punish this this regime. Let me say this. A few months ago, the international community report on called Israel Action in Gaza, Anatomy of Genocide. That report contained an abundant documentation of examples of right abuses and many, many awful things. This was dismissed as biased and anti-Semitic by United States of America itself. And the last point I want to make here. Go ahead.
All right. Well, let me get thank you. Let me get Charlotte in on this discussion. Sure. Let's talk about the irony of the Israelis banning UNRWA. I mean, isn't it true that there would never have been a need for the creation of UNRWA if the Zionists had not stolen Palestinian lands and displaced them to begin with? And I also want to look at the collusion of the Western regimes in dealing with UNRWA, because we know we go back in January and the regime had accused some individuals of working with, as they say, terrorist groups. And these same Western regimes cut the funding then. So let's talk about both sides of that, please.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this is the very reason that the Zionist regime is attacking UNRWA to begin with, because it's meant as an attack on the Palestinian refugees. It's meant as an attack on the fundamental right of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and lands, which is a fundamental, internationally recognized human right whose legitimacy is fundamental and like a natural principle of law, but is also upheld annually at the United Nations by the vast majority of the nations of the world and the General Assembly. The right of Palestinian refugees to return has always been at the heart of the Palestinian cause, because that's the right to return to their homes and lands, to reclaim those homes and lands from the colonizers who have stolen them for the past 76 years as part of the Zionist project. And the Zionist entity is absolutely unwilling to live with the return of Palestinian refugees to their homes and lands. And so it is both attempting to force Palestinians from their lands, as we see through this ongoing genocide for not just the past year, but the past 76 years, but also through the, and so it's trying to force to either kill Palestinians or force them to leave their land, but it's also trying to destroy the right to return. And that has been a key priority of the Zionist regime for decades and decades and decades. And they have failed failed to do so. And the fact is that the holding fast to the return and to justice and to identity in Palestine is not something that's contained in a UN agency. It's something that's upheld by the Palestinian people. But this is fundamentally why the regime sees UNRWA as an enemy force that has to be destroyed, because they don't want Palestinian refugees to be able to sustain themselves in the most basic ways with food, medicine, education, these basic needs that enable Palestinian refugees to remain on their land, to remain in refugee camps, and to insist on saying that we are going to return to our homes and lands, that we will not forget Palestine. Now, of course, the Western countries are fully complicit in this attack and have been from the very beginning. They've traditionally seen UNRWA simply as a force that is only valuable insofar as it can pacify Palestinian refugees and attempt to prevent them from becoming too engaged in the struggle for the liberation of Palestine. Of course, like, that has also failed. It's important to note here that in Gaza, 70%, if not more, of the population are Palestinian refugees who have been denied their right to return for the past 76 years. So the Western countries that engaged in this defunding, I mean, this goes hand in hand with the support of the bombing, the provision of weapons, the unlimited diplomatic, political, and military support for the Zionist regime as it's carrying out a genocide. Of course, that also goes hand in hand with supporting the Zionist project, and they view attacking UNRWA as a way to eliminate Palestinian refugees' right to return, to eliminate the consciousness and conviction of Palestinians that they will return to their land. But it's also very clear that they have entirely failed to do so for the past 76 years, and that they are certainly capable of causing human misery and suffering, and that's something that they seem to prioritize, to cause that kind of human, but they've failed to destroy Palestinians' commitment to return.
Right. Well, Saab, there has been verbal condemnation of this move from many countries, including some of Israel's Western supporters. They're saying that this move would lead to more starvation and a greater tragedy in Gaza. But isn't that exactly what the Israeli regime wants? I mean, more suffering for the Palestinian people.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, if they can suck the air from the lungs of the Palestinian people, they would do that with the blessing of all the West. Every country in the West, no exception, from the United States of America to the last one. And the irony of the matter, this entity was the Zionist fascist entity, was given its birth certificate by the United Nations. At the time, there was 51 states. Today, there is 195. And this is a great misjustice committed against the Palestinian people. It's violated and abused all the rights from self-determination to international human rights. And by creating this entity on the land of Palestine as well, they violated the applicable international law and standards as well, and the international humanitarian law. All of this resulted in ethnic, apart from just genocide, which was taking place from 1948 onwards, an ethnic cleansing. There is 750,000 at the time were pushed out of Palestine. 80% of the people in Gaza are facing genocide today are from those people who's settled in the refugee camps in Gaza. And as my friend said, they are not allowed to return home. And this is where this Zionist entity is angry as well, and the West with it, supporting it. Those people are resilient, even in the middle of the genocide. Their eyes on their hometowns in Yaffa, in Haifa, and in Lod, and in Ramla. And they are not just going to be defeated. And that's what they showed. And the problem is the Western countries, they shield the behavior, the criminal behavior, actually, of this arrogant Zionist entity. And they provide it with impunity from international bodies. And they think the Zionist entity, by carrying such activities, are protected by the U.S. and the West, financed actually by the West and the U.S. by the taxpayers, since their industries in the occupied territories of Palestine and in historical Palestine, they lost tons of farming lands, tons of factories being destroyed, over 360,000 reservists being joined to the army, built out of factories and education and health. It's the whole economy is collapsing. It's being sustained by the United States of America financially and militarily, and by the Western people, taxpayers, who cannot afford free education, who cannot afford health, but they can pay it for a criminal entity who committing genocide live on TV.
Well, Charlotte, can you break it down for our viewers who perhaps does not understand the role of UNRWA, what it really provides? I mean, what would it mean if UNRWA was no longer operating in the Gaza Strip or the West Bank?
So UNRWA, first of all, I think it's worthwhile noting that UNRWA was actually created as a separate system outside of the traditional system, the traditional UN system that supports refugees. So it was created as this special agency that requires donor countries to voluntarily donate to sustain UNRWA rather than it being ordinarily funded as part of the UN's budget, which in and of itself is something that happened because of the pressure of Western countries and imperialist powers to try to kind of diminish the fundamental rights and the security of Palestinian refugees struggling to return to their homes and lands. And it's also important to note that the admission of the so-called Israeli state, the Zionist regime, to the United Nations was conditioned upon its acceptance of the UN resolutions outstanding at that time, first and foremost, Resolution 190. And refugees to their homes and lands. Now, of course, the Zionist regime has always been an illegitimate project in occupied Palestine, but this just underlines the illegitimacy of that project and the illegitimacy of its continuing participation in the United Nations in any international fora. It should be derecognized by every state and project that claims to have an interest in supporting human rights and in upholding principles of international law. And of course, the imperialist powers have shown that they care nothing for this. But UNRWA provides a series of services within two Palestinian refugees who are UNRWA registered refugees who were displaced from their homes and lands during al-Nakba, and their descendants who retain that status as Palestinian refugees and retain their right to return to their original homes and lands and villages and properties in occupied Palestine, from which they were forced to leave in 1947. In 1948, and then also again in 1967 by the invading Zionist armies seeking to ethnically cleanse Palestine. So UNRWA provides an array of services, including running hospitals and medical clinics, schools and educational institutions, providing food aid and other kind of human aid and resources, and also being a source of employment for people, for Palestinian refugees in the camps. And this is one of the key elements that is frequently under attack by the Western powers that are some of the donor countries to UNRWA, is an attempt to kind of control who is able to be employed, because they want to actually strip the Palestinian resistance of its popular cradle and popular support by making it impossible to have a job if you are in any way a supporter of any Palestinian political party. So there's this attempt to kind of forcibly depoliticize the Palestinian people through the control of money. So these are key needs of any population: the need to work, to have a job, to have an income, to have education, to have medical care, to have food. These are basic needs and basic resources that, like, for a place like Gaza, where 40%, where 70% of Palestinians are refugees, that are essential to the continuation of human life. And so the destruction and eradication of UNRWA and the eradication of these services is something that the Zionist regime sees as a fundamental part of seeking to carry out its goal of ongoing genocide and ethnic cleansing throughout occupied Palestine.
All right. Well, Saab, countries are condemning the Israeli ban on UNRWA, with the Republic of Ireland now calling on the EU to review its relations with the Zionist regime following the move. I mean, your thoughts on this. How likely would it be for the EU to cut its ties with the Israeli regime over this?
There is two sides in the EU. There is the Irish and the Spanish and others who wants to see some steps being taken out against the Zionist entity to review the favorite status of trade they given to the Zionist entity. And there is the other side, which is like the British and some East Europeans and North countries of the Western Europe, who are 100% they are behind the Zionist entity, since they look upon it as it's their military base who support its controlling of the region in there. But at the same time, when you look at the Irish government, there is hypocrisy in here, since there is in the Irish Parliament there is a bill about the called the Occupied Territories Bill, which is about not allowing Zionist settlements in the West Bank to cover up or to bring goods to Ireland and to start sanctioning against these and not to trade with such colonies in the West Bank. And it's not being passed in Ireland. So we can hear a lot of rhetorics and a lot of support and recognition for the state of Palestine. But in general, West Europe is still in bed with the Zionist entity, and West Europe is controlled by the United States of America. There is no sovereign states in West Europe who can dare to challenge the de facto, which is supporting the United States of America's effort to sustain the Zionist entity. Since the Zionist entity today seeing itself in existential war, as they say, and using genocide to entrench its occupation in between the river to the sea in Palestine. And the United States of America is with that. Okay. Whatever you hear, all the West and the United States of America are behind the Zionist entity.
Well, Charlotte, the spokesperson for the UN Secretary General, has called the regime's decision regarding UNRWA as catastrophic and going against international law. I mean, with the UN Secretary General saying this for over a year now, that Israel's acts are going against international law, doesn't it make a mockery and basically delegitimize the mission of the UN itself?
Well, it absolutely does. Certainly, you know, put the lie to the claim that the states that are involved in the United Nations, particularly, I should note here, you know, we're specifically speaking about the United States first and foremost, of course, Britain and France, and their extremely malicious role on the Security Council, particularly that of the United States, in repeatedly vetoing any kind of resolution seeking to hold the Zionist regime accountable for its ongoing crimes against the Palestinian people and its escalated genocide over the past year. The fact is that the only forces that are actually seeking and taking material action to defend the Palestinian people are the Palestinian resistance, the Lebanese resistance, the people and armed forces of Yemen, in Syria, in Iraq, and of course in the Islamic Republic of Iran. We're seeing some important, you know, diplomatic and legal initiatives from South Africa, Nicaragua, Venezuela, and Cuba. But these are actions that are not being taken up by the United Nations itself, despite, you know, the interests of some special rapporteurs in pursuing justice. The fact is that the Zionist regime continues to sit in the United Nations, and that in and of itself makes a mockery of the institution. It's right. Not possible to have a body that's committed to upholding international law, peace, security, and justice, and there is a genocidal regime that is based on nothing other than things that are fundamentally illegal under international law, like right. colonialism, land theft, and military occupation, and ongoing military occupation, denial of the right to return, mass incarceration, targeted executions and assassinations, ongoing invasions, and destabilization of an entire region is sitting in the United Nations while its largest funder, backer, and provider holds veto power over anything the institution does. That, you know, the international hope is resting in the forces of resistance and not in the United Nations, because it has shown itself to be a force that is entirely under the control and domination of the party that is funding, backing, and arming, and indeed directing this genocide with billions of dollars in weaponry.
Right. Well, stop. With that being said, I mean, in your perspective, how many Palestinians must be sacrificed by this rules-based international regime before enough is enough?
The Western imperialist countries, seeing the war in Gaza and the genocide in Gaza from different perspective, they see the United States of America can dominate West Asia by the existing Zionist entity. And the Zionist entity is the United States of America being strengthened from war to war. They never fought a single war by themselves from 1948 till today. And if we remember the promise attack, Al-Wa'd al-Sadiq called from Iran to respond to its embassy attack in there. We've seen the United States of America's airplanes, the British, the French air powers, and even Jordanians and others protecting the Zionist entity. And we've seen the last attack in Iran, even the United States of America put THAAD missiles all over the Zionist entity with American crews running in it to protect the skies in case of a response from the Iranian people. While the Iranian people alone, they managed to abort such an attack was organized by the United States of America and the Zionist entity. So they see the Zionist entity vital, so the United States of America can project its status as the number one superpower in the world. But things are changing. The Gaza exposed a lot of things, and Gaza showed this international norm is collapsing. And right, there is, through the BRICS and other countries, coming new norm.
Well, I appreciate both of you being with me, Saab Sheth, West Asia expert out of Belfast, Charlotte Cates, international coordinator, Samadoun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Darsi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, we have reached 87th verse of Surah An-Naml. Now let's listen to the verse.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَيَوْمَ يُنْفَخُ فِي الصُّورِ فَفَزِعَ مَنْ فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَنْ فِي الْأَرْضِ إِلَّا مَنْ شَاءَ اللَّهِ وَكُلٌّ أَتَوْهُ دَاخِرِينَ.
And warn of the day the horn will be blown, and whoever is in the heavens and whoever is on the earth will be terrified, except whom Allah wills, and all will come to Him humbled.
The verse says, يَوْمَ يُنْفَخُ فِي الصُّورِ, the day that the trumpet will be blown. And we said that this blowing the trumpet has different occurrences in the Holy Quran, and the commentators are of different sides regarding what kind is the verse talking about, this verse under discussion. And we said, and we actually concluded our discussion in the previous episode, that since the verse is saying the very fact that يَوْمَ يُنْفَخُ فِي الصُّورِ فَفَزِعَ مَنْ فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ, the day when the trumpet will be blown and those who are in the heavens and those who are in the earth will be terrified. And this terrifying, the reason for it is the very blowing of the trumpet. This means that this is the blast, this is the trumpet that is happening at the beginning of the ending of this world. I mean, this is the very first trumpet that everybody is scared. Everybody is scared. Everybody now notices the very blowing of this terrifying trumpet. Why? Because when the second trumpet happens, the second trumpet is for the people who know where they are, but now they hear the trumpet and they are scared of their deeds. They are aware of their deeds. They are scared of their deeds being presented to them and to the Almighty Allah and to the Infallibles. So this is the apparent of the Quranic term fafazia, because the verse indicates that this fear and horror is because of the blowing in the trumpet. Now, يَوْمَ يُنْفَخُ, the verse says. This Arabic word يُنْفَخُ comes from نَفْخ, and this means to blow. And the word سُور means trumpet. Now, when offering the commentary of chapter Zumar, God willing, if we have time, we will talk about the different ideas of the commentators regarding its purpose. Now, the verse has something very important. It says, accept him whom Allah will please. Illa man shaa Allah. Everybody will be scared. Illa man shaa Allah. Accept whom Allah will please. And this points to those who are good and pure, irrespective of the angels and the believers who are in the heavens and the earth. As a result of their faith, they will have a very special tranquility. And you may remember the previous verse interestingly also talked about this tranquility, this rest. And neither will the first blast make them terrified, nor the last one. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أنتم الفقراء.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
It is interesting that in the next verses we recite, whoever brings good for him shall be better than it, and they shall be secure from the terror on that day. And the last sentence of the verse under discussion, which says, all shall come to him in utter humility. This part is apparently very general. There is no exception in it, because even the prophets and saints will be humble before the creator of the universe, before the absolute cause. And it is really interesting that there is no exception in this part. Everybody will be the same. All creatures, the whole creation of the Almighty Allah, will be humble before him. In different verses of the Holy Quran, we read, therefore, they shall most surely be brought up, except the chosen servants of the Almighty Allah, the purified ones. So, this verse of the Holy Quran contains no contradiction with the generality of this verse under discussion. Because the verse under discussion says, كُلُّنْ أَتَوْهُ دَاخِرِينَ, everybody will be coming to him in utter humility. But this verse is referring to the principle of attendance in gathering, the place of resurrection before Allah. And secondly, is referring to the attendance in the scene of reckoning the deeds. But this verse is referring to the very principle that I just mentioned. So that's it. That's why the Almighty Allah says you have to consider this fact that you will be summoned, you will be mustered out, each of every of your nations, first for raj'ah, for coming back to life, and then for reckoning and resurrection. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, and that's when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
More than a year into Israel's genocidal war in Gaza has led to the death and injury of hundreds of thousands of people in the besieged territory. The rest left have been displaced and are fighting for very daily existence with the bare minimum in their hands. Trapped in tents and uninhabitable shelters, winter will harm thousands of displaced families struggling for any means of life amid the unfathomable carnage and the incessant Israeli horror inflicted upon them. And as starvation hits back, their lives will only become more hellish.
Our tents are uninhabitable. The summer heat has caused the tent's nylon components to tear. We've appealed to the organizations to assist with providing rainflies to keep the water from coming inside the tent, but we've yet to hear back. A lot of problems plague us here in the Shu'ab displacement camp. We've no food, blankets, rainflies, or covers. Our kids don't get medicine or even clothes. We flood Al-Shujaya neighborhood without anything.
Since our tent is merely made of ripped pieces, we are without covers, blankets, and rain flies. Here we have nothing. There is no food, medication, or clothes. At night, our little brother shivers from the cold. We only have one blanket. We don't have anything to cover ourselves with. We can't even fit in our tiny tent.
Winter clothes have been banned from entering the strip, adding to people suffering in the face of extreme adversity. And for people who remain without shelter on the streets, the trauma they're facing will be unmatched. The displaced people in Gaza have experienced terrible misery in every aspect of their lives as a result of Israel's genocidal war on the strip. They will now face additional traumas when winter approaches, depriving them of every means of survival and leaving them shivering with fear and cold. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Gaza.
As in previous years, people from Pakistan and Kashmir took to the streets on October 27 to mark Black Day. Pakistan regards this day as the anniversary of India's defiance of British partition plan in 1947, which led to India's control over the Jammu and Kashmir regions. The day was marked with rallies, protests, and seminars to express solidarity with the Kashmiri people and their continued struggle for self-determination under Indian control.
We will continue to raise voice for the oppressed people of Kashmir who are facing atrocities by Indian forces in Jammu and Kashmir regions. We want justice from the international community for their right of self-determination.
We condemn Indian illegal occupation of Jammu and Kashmir region. Kashmiris have been struggling for their right to self-determination for the past 77 years. Thousands of Kashmiris, men, women, and children have been brutally killed by Indian occupied forces in recent years, and the international community is just a silent observer.
Kashmir, a predominantly Muslim Himalayan region, remains a point of division between India and Pakistan, both holding parts of it but claiming the region in full. The Kashmir conflict has led to several wars between the nuclear-armed neighbors since their separation in 1947. The observance of Kashmir Solidarity Day allows not only the people of Pakistan, but also its government to voice their support for the Kashmir liberation movement.
Pakistan will continue to extend political, diplomatic, and moral support to our Kashmiri brothers and sisters for the just and peaceful settlement of the Jammu and Kashmir dispute in accordance with the UN Security Council resolutions.
Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari and the Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif urged the international community to push India to end human rights abuses in Jammu and Kashmir regions and to implement UN Security Council resolutions.
In the face of global diplomatic pressure, Pakistan's stance remains unwavering as it advocates for a resolution that aligns with the Kashmiri people's aspirations and their right to self-determination. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
The multinational financial institution Barclays was forced to close its doors in Belfast on Saturday due to a Palestinian rights protest. the bank has supported arms suppliers to Israel to the tune of more than £8 billion since 2021 alone.
We want them to understand that it's wrong. We want them to understand that they don't have to profit off war and death and destruction. We don't have to profit off dead people. We don't have to profit on bombs being dropped on kids, on hospitals and schools.
Activists are convinced that Washington is responsible for the Middle East crisis.
Obviously, the United States are driving it. Look at the size of Israel. It's a tiny country. It isn't even a country. It's just in somebody else's land. It's tiny, absolutely tiny. And look at the control they have. Look at the power they have. Look at the weapons they have.
Barclays, you can divest from. You have like McDonald's who are they're actually giving free meals and things to the IDF, and it's just appalling. And you know, I personally don't want my money to be used in that sort of way.
Despite public outcry across the globe, the Israeli regime's indiscriminate killing of innocent civilians in Gaza, the occupied West Bank, and Lebanon shows no sign of abating.
It's typical Western foreign policy, really, trying to control the world through proxies. And I think Israel is a proxy that's gone rogue and it's out of control.
They'll say, you have to stop doing this. Now here are the bombs to do it with.
So you think the United States is talking out of both sides of its mouth?
Yes, absolutely. And it has been for generations.
The campaign to encourage customers to close their Barclays accounts was launched in July 2022. And since then, almost 4,000 people have done so. That effort is ongoing. It is easy to switch banks in the UK. And these campaigners want as many people as possible to close their Barclays accounts on the same day to ensure the greatest possible impact. And that day is Thursday, November the 21st. Jerome Hughes, Belfast.
The Hosseiniya of Imam Khomeini is filled with people who are here to meet Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The families are holding up pictures of their martyred loved ones. These are families that have lost a loved one for Iran's security.
This is one of the routine meetings that the leader holds with members of the public. And this time it is with families of martyrs who gave their lives to protect Iran. For those in attendance, a rare honor. Their presence, a strong act of support. Their chants, a powerful pledge of allegiance.
This is the first time I have the privilege of meeting the leader, and I am filled with excitement.
I have had the distinct honor of meeting the leader on 4 or 5 separate occasions.
With all my heart, I am immensely proud of my martyred husband for his sacrifice.
We are immensely grateful to all our youth from diverse backgrounds and varying perspectives for their unwavering support of the leader. Their love and honor for the martyrs are a testament to their devotion.
If the leader calls for war, I am ready to make the ultimate sacrifice, just as my husband did.
If the leader calls for war, I will be the first to answer the call.
Our loyalty to the leader and the Islamic Republic is unwavering. We believe this will help ensure that Iran remains strong and resilient.
Iran has lost numerous service members and civilians in terrorist attacks and conflicts against invading forces. Today, Iran owes its peace, security, and territorial integrity to the sacrifices made by these families' loved ones, making this meeting particularly meaningful.
But the timing of this meeting makes it even more significant, amplifying every word of the leader, with a huge crowd taking every opportunity to offer their support.
Just 2 days after the Israeli regime's military aggression, described by Ayatollah Khamenei as an evil act that must neither be magnified nor downplayed, many Iranians are calling for retaliation. Chants of allegiance resonate through the crowd as the leader draws attention to Israel's horrific war crimes committed in complete disregard for the UN Charter and the Geneva Conventions. Ayatollah Khamenei expressed disappointment over the international community's inaction against the Israeli regime and called for a diplomatic, economic, and even military coalition to oppose it. Most importantly, he emphasized that the Israeli regime must be made to recognize the strength, determination, and resourcefulness of the Iranian nation. Now, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, it is up to the responsible officials to take appropriate action. گیسوم شاهمدی، تهران.
A chant heard in central London this Saturday as thousands from across the UK took to the streets in a counter-demonstration against right-wing extremism.
We've come down from Glasgow today to stand in solidarity with other trade unionists and anti-racists and anti-fascists against the mobilisation of the far right.
Not far from the counter-demonstrators, those who find immigrants the reason behind the socioeconomic woes of white working-class Britons are marching. Their detained leader, who goes by the alias Tommy Robinson, was behind the violent race riots this summer. Ahead of the march, he was arrested by the police upon his return from abroad under counter-terrorism legislation.
He is an Islamophobe and he is stirring up hatred, particularly towards Muslims, but also refugees. He's trying to build a far-right street movement behind him. And that movement supports Nigel Farage and Reform UK. So it's very a dangerous movement that could drag politics to the right.
Right-wing populism at the top. To those in politics, that's where the problem begins. Those failures include falling living standards and a housing and cost of living crisis, one of the issues that the far-right leaders claim to be addressing. The rise of the far-right is not limited to the UK, where right-wing Reform Party led by Nigel Farage won 5 seats in Parliament in the July election.
The threat of the far-right, campaigners say, looms large on British society. Lessons from the rest of Europe show a growing danger of disillusionment with politics and pandering to the racist agenda of the far right when it comes to immigration and also Islamophobia. The collective action today, they say, aimed at countering that. Saeed Poor is up, London.
The presidential election campaign in the United States is nearing its end, but with no lessening of warmongering rhetoric from both candidates. The outgoing administration of Joe Biden has effectively joined Israel's multiple wars and attempted genocide in Gaza. His party's candidate for president, Kamala Harris, and the Republican candidate, ex-President Donald Trump, have both seemingly tried to outdo each other in bellicose rhetoric towards Iran, Gaza, Lebanon, and elsewhere in the region.
Regardless of what the U.S. government says, be the administration Democrat or Republican, real peace is not at all in their interest. Because we have to always remember that the reason why the U.S. supports Israel is because Israel acts as an outpost of U.S. imperial interests in the Middle East. So the only reason why, in the case of the Biden administration, they pretend to want peace is just it's an acknowledgement of how strong the anti-imperialist movement has been and how strong the movement for Palestine has been in this country. But it's all political theater. It's all smoke and mirrors.
Amid record inflation, major dissatisfaction with both candidates, widespread fears of continued election-related violence and other issues, with Harris promising to continue Biden's policy towards Israel, many voters don't see any good choices when it comes to foreign policy in Southwest Asia either.
Trump, I get the impression, doesn't particularly really have an interest in involving himself in protracted wars. But on the other hand, I think he's perfectly willing to give the Israelis a free hand. I mean, a very free hand. Because, I mean, as bad as Biden has been, Trump will be far worse. I mean, he will give them carte blanche to do everything, anything and everything they want. And that would be really, really terrible.
The West has been stunned by the timidity and ineffectiveness of Israel's U.S.-aided missile attack on Iran. Many Americans say they aren't surprised by the attack.
I believe that we have been going after Iran for a very long time. Israel has as well. They've killed their scientists. They literally assassinated their scientists in Tehran. But we've also, the United States has had Iran in our crosshairs for decades. And I know that you probably read Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney's National Security Doctrine. that said Saudi Arabia is the gateway, Iraq is the stepping stone, and Iran is the ultimate prize. They have been trying to seize Iran ever since the Shah fell.
Unlike in 2008 or 2016, neither candidate is even suggesting that Washington break with its longtime policy of war over diplomacy. Promoting war in Southwest Asia may be the one policy area where the two main candidates differ the least. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
Hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets across Yemen, waving flags and holding banners to honor the martyred resistance leaders assassinated by Israel over the past year. They vowed to carry forward the legacy of the fallen leaders and pledged to deliver a historic defeat to Israel.
The resistance is unyielding. Each day it achieves new victories. Right now, coordination across the region is strengthening as factions work together to end the Israeli regime once and for all.
The protesters also lashed out at some Arab leaders, condemning their complicity with Israel against the Palestinians and Lebanese people.
Not only are some regimes failing to support Gaza, but some Arab rulers are aiding Israel. This is a tragic reality. By Allah, the Yemeni people will press on to liberate Al-Aqsa, no matter how long their aggression continues.
Despite repeated warnings from the U.S. and Israel urging Yemen to stay out of the war on Gaza, Yemen has continued to impose a blockade on all Israeli-linked ships sailing in the Red Sea. In a bold show of defiance, the Yemeni army has also launched hypersonic missiles targeting various military sites inside occupied Palestine. In response, both Israel and the U.S. have conducted attacks on Yemen, hoping to force Ansarullah movement to end their military support for Palestine. Their warnings and threats, however, have not deterred the Yemenis.
Israel threatens to attack us and target the Mujahideen in Yemen, but we tell them we have been through this before for 10 years straight. These threats won't stop us from supporting Lebanon and Gaza.
Today's nationwide demonstrations in Yemen reflect a rising call for action and solidarity throughout the Arab and Islamic world as people unite in support of Palestine and the armed resistance to halt what they see as a genocide unfolding against the Palestinians by Israel.
Yemen has already shown support for the people of Palestine and Lebanon by launching attacks on Israeli positions. The country now says 400,000 Yemeni troops are prepared for direct confrontation with Israel as the regime continues its aggression against innocent civilians. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
In the limelight.
Divided on critical issues, European nations and the EU generally face an uncertain future. The economic conditions are dire for many. The social embodiment of these problems, particularly in terms of growing hostility toward migration, feeds a feverish political environment that destabilizes institutions and elites. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote, tied into a war in Ukraine, confused about its identity and autonomy, the European political establishment has consigned EU member states to a period of considerable perturbation. The Eurozone economies are being buffeted by major headwinds. Hampered by high energy costs, Eurozone economies are witnessing industrial hollowing out as energy-intensive industries shudder. How EU member states individually and collectively deal with present impasse will determine the medium-term prosperity and security of the zone's citizens. In the face of its myriad challenges, the EU is showing signs of fragmentation. There are doubts about the European Commission's capacity to build a genuine and robust sense of common purpose. This is apparent across all key policy vectors: the Ukraine war, migration, and industrial development. The unquestioned commitment to the war in Ukraine is now being questioned. The loss of low-cost Russian gas and oil is rampant. Mario Draghi's recent report to the European Commission on European competitiveness acknowledges the centrality of energy costs, but did not dare name the role played by the EU and American sanctions against Russian energy. Voters are angry at the cost of the war in terms of local industries, jobs, and the adverse impact on the cost of living. Many in Europe increasingly want peace through negotiations. Hungarian and Slovakian leaders have spoken out against the continuation of the war, despite coming under intense pressure from the political mainstream. The dominant establishment view from Brussels is to continue arming the Ukrainians. A schism is apparent, not just among political leaders. Since the start of the Russia military operation in February 2022, an estimated 6 million or more Ukrainians have fled into Europe. While welcome at first, there are increasingly more signs that the refugees are beginning to overstay their welcome. The Ukraine conflict and Europe's economic problems are interrelated, resulting in increasingly high energy costs. The German economy has been in protracted stagnation. As the beating heart of European industry, the rest of the Eurozone isn't doing much better. The Eurozone as a whole is expected to achieve GDP growth of around 1% this year. With economic woes and concerns about migration, voters turn toward anti-immigration and anti-war candidates. European nations' responses to proposed tariffs on Chinese-made electric vehicles is further evidence of growing schisms across the region. The European Commission initiated a closed-door inquiry into alleged subsidies for Chinese manufacturers, resulting in proposals to impose a range of tariffs. At a vote of the 27 member states, the proposal for tariffs was supported by 10 nations, 5 opposed to the tariffs, and 12 abstained. The Commission proceeded to impose the tariffs anyway, despite the overwhelming majority of member states not supporting them. The UK, while no longer a member of the EU, is also on the cusp of economic challenges. The new Labour government's austerity measures are more likely to exacerbate the economic woes than to alleviate them, while already leading to a collapse in the administration's public standing. Divided on critical issues, European nations and the EU generally face an uncertain future. The economic conditions are dire for many. The social embodiment of these problems, particularly in terms of growing hostility toward migration, feeds a feverish political environment that destabilizes institutions and elites. Without addressing the elephant in the room, namely resolving the energy uncompetitiveness problem, European economic policy is likely to be piecemeal. Without a coherent long-term vision, the tensions between protectionists and others are likely to continue for the foreseeable future. French President Emmanuel Macron once said that Europe will not be a geopolitical priority for the US. Like before, Macron laments the loss of European autonomy And like before, there seems to be little clarity about the root causes of Europe's confusion and discomfort. Meanwhile, and as a consequence, the social-political situation across Western Europe is likely to become more volatile.
Two men.
Yani?
Yeah.